When our brother Roland asked me to present some thoughts that I might have on maybe a little different perspective on our brothers and sisters in Africa, I thought, I really don't do it justice when I read Brian's and Smith's emails. They really describe things pretty good over there. And I love to read their emails and see the things that are going on over there, but believe me, it's much more enjoyable being there in person and seeing it firsthand. I remember the first trip that I went over there with Brian. I was a little apprehensive about. He told me to prepare 4 or 5 sermons and have them ready for over there. So I did that, and when I got there, I mean, I was called on several times to preach, but I found the experience that I had when I was there was one of maybe glancing at my notes and relying very heavily on the Spirit of God to direct me in the things that I need to say for those particular people. And I'm happy to say that I believe that many, many times he did just that. The words that I was able to present to my brothers and sisters was nothing that I had prepared in advance, but I believe words that were given to me by the Lord to help me to present a special thought that might be for just that certain group of people. There's been quite a few that have been to Kenya now. How many people here have been to Kenya? There's quite a few hands. Kate, did I see your hand? Yeah, we have some special pictures with Kate over there. I'm sure she's going to be more than anxious to share them with you. Our Maasai queen. Now I get to use a little bit of Swahili on you. We'll see if Brian knows this one. Niko na faraha kuahapa. Niko na faraha kuahapa. I am very happy to be here. That's the only one that I really learned. I tried one. I had some written down here, and I was introducing my wife. Huyu ni mwike mwangu Karin. And then I would introduce Daniel and Kate. Huyu ni kijana wangu Daniel na mwike wake kete. And then I thought I'd throw in, and Moses or Michael was doing all this translation for me. Of course, they spoke that in English so that the other people, the Mzungus we're with, could understand what I was saying. And they get a big kick out of us when we call ourselves Mzungus, white men. Then Moses was standing up there one day, so I said, Huyu ni ndugu yangu mapacha. And they thought, well, he must have that wrong, you know, because first time I said that, it's real quiet. And Moses caught on, or Michael, I guess it was, caught on that I was saying that first. I was saying, this is my twin brother, Michael. But I think I had him fooled until I told him, you can tell the difference because I'm better looking. But they wouldn't buy that at all. once I told them that, they knew I wasn't serious anymore. But I, you know, there's a little game that Karen plays when we finish a trip like this. She says, "Okay, what was your favorite thing? What was the most dramatic thing? What experience did you have that, you know, the different things?" And I can remember one of the images that sticks out in my mind the most was the first trip with Brian and Eli and Gretchen and Dwayne and Kathy and Michelle. Who else was there? Is that it? Yeah, and me. And Becky, yeah. I remember we had a service where there's about 10 congregations that met, I believe it was in Kanini at Moses Church. And it was outside because there's way too many people for the church. And one of the things that just really stuck in my mind was we had a lunch that day that consisted of one bottle of pop. Everybody got one bottle of pop and about 4 slices of bread. And that was our lunch. And they were absolutely thrilled with that. I mean, they were thrilled because they don't get that good a lunch that often. And Brian and Buzz have made it very plain to them, we don't want you to fix us special meals and then you guys have to have nothing to eat or eat something different. He said, we'll eat what you eat. So this day, that's what 300 people had for lunch, was a bottle of pop and 4 slices of bread. And the picture, the image that I have that really, really stuck with me, what I can still see the face on one young mother when she saw that everybody had been fed and there was probably 10 loaves of bread left. And she would not take her eyes off of those 10 loaves of bread. Just in case. She was going to be quick and she was going to be ready in case they offered seconds to anybody. And I could just see the way she was eyeing that food, that how important that was to her. And I'm thinking, you know, 2 slices of bread. What is that to us? There's a scripture. I wish I'd had a little bit more time to present some videos for you. I took a lot of pictures, and I have some pictures that I know you would love to see, but I just didn't have time to put them in the format that we could take a look at them. So hopefully I can have some at some other time to let you take a look at. There's a one of the things that I did when I was over there is I gave many of the congregations a memory verse to learn. And I don't need to look it up. It's Mosiah 1:49. Any idea what that says, Placido? Mosiah 1:49. It's right across your father's house, on the right above his front door. It's the last half of it anyway is, he who is in the service of his fellow being is only in the service to his God. And that's the memory verse that I gave to each of our brothers and sisters over there, most of them, at least when I was preaching. I gave them that memory verse to learn, and I told them, when I come back, I want to hear it from you. And then I elaborated and I explained what that verse meant to me. And to me, that verse is a culmination of everything that's written in these books. It's the story that Jesus was trying to tell us. And it's the big difference between our church and most of the rest of the Christian churches in this world. That you need to be in service to your brothers and sisters, to love one another. As I was preaching over there, I thought about preparing sermons, and each time that I stood to speak to the people, I didn't need to refer to those sermons. When I look at the opportunity that I had to go over there and preach to a people that are hungering and thirsting after righteousness, I thought, what joy that is. I thought about a sermon that our brother Steve McGee gave at the East Local a few weeks back about joy. I guess it was more than a few weeks back now. I've been gone a month. And I thought about the joy that is described in many places in the Book of Mormon, about the unspeakable joy that is a gift from God. And I thought, I know that I was able to experience that joy when I was standing in front of those people and proclaiming the gospel of Jesus Christ. I personally don't think there is a greater joy in this world that a person can experience than to be able to proclaim the gospel of Jesus Christ to those who are hungering and thirsting after righteousness, those who are eager to hear your next words. You know, I thank the Lord for that opportunity, and I thank Brian and Buzz for allowing me to assist in their field. There is no greater joy than to be in the service of your brothers and sisters. And I think that's the way God made it. He made it that way intentionally. You know, we get caught up in our world here, in the things of the world, searching for our own understanding of joy sometimes. But sometimes I think maybe we're not looking in the right places. And I know each one of you have probably experienced the same thing that I have when you have been in the service of your brothers and sisters. There's the joy that comes that to me there's no greater joy that comes from our God. I experienced many things this time that I hadn't experienced in my first two trips. one of the things that I recognized is there really is not a real strong influence of the Mormon church over there. At least that was my experience with the people that we talked to. Most of them do not know why people, most of the Christians in this world, hate the Book of Mormon. Most of our brothers and sisters over there don't know that. All they know is that the other Christians hate the Book of Mormon. And they tell all kinds of lies. They can somehow justify telling a lie to their own benefit, to calling good evil and evil good. They can justify lying about something like the Book of Mormon. I explained a little bit to some of the people about what the Mormon Church teaches. And I don't think it got through because it just isn't, to them, that's not a concept that is rational. And I was kind of glad to hear that because some of the things that were taught in that church really don't make sense. And they're certainly not taught in the Bible and the Book of Mormon. We were able to go to Tanzania at the first part of our trip, Karen and I and Buzz and Sue. And we went down there to, our first stop was a little city called Mwanza. And we had our church service on Sunday. And then after the service, they said, well, there's another congregation we want you to go meet with. So that was one of the days we had church services at two different places there in Mwanza. And the leader of that church was a young man that I had baptized on my previous trip, or the trip that I was with Brian. And, or no, I guess it was the second trip. And I was feeling very good. I mean, that makes a guy feel good, knowing that someone that you baptized is now the leader of this group and teaching these people about the gospel of Jesus Christ. And I thought, that was wonderful. Until we got back, a few days later, we heard some other church had come in there and offered him some money to be the minister in their church. And right now, I would say that is probably the single biggest concern of our brothers and sisters there in Africa, because there are so many churches that offer them money to be in the ministry. And every other minister that they know gets paid for doing their job. Why shouldn't they? So that is something that we need to address. And we, both Smith and I, when we were on these last two trips, we tried to make that an issue every opportunity that we got, that we explained to them what Alma says in the first chapter of Alma. And I'd like to refresh your memories just a little bit on that and read just a few words from the first chapter of Alma. And I was reading this one day, and I'd probably read it before, but it just didn't really sink in. But Alma chapter 1, verse 17. And this is after a guy named Nehor was preaching to the people that all mankind should be saved. Sound familiar? And teaching the people that because of his ministry, he should be getting paid from them. They should support him. And anyway, he was preaching that, and this is what Alma had to say about that. But Alma said unto him, behold, this is the first time that priestcraft has been introduced among this people. And when I read that, it sunk into me how serious a matter that is, being a part of a paid ministry. Now, if you were to ask any other Christian minister in this world if they consider being a paid minister, if they consider themselves part of a priestcraft, of course they would say no. But we know what God says about it. And it is a very serious concern over there in Africa. We need to pray for those people that they will be able to understand the teachings of the Church of Christ and the teachings of that God wants them to know about paid ministry and about the authority of the ministry, the authority of the priesthood. I think they have a pretty good grip on most of the parts of the gospel. But that is one they had difficulty with, and I think many of them, many of our brothers and sisters there have come to a good understanding, but the ones that are new in the gospel still have a very serious problem with that. You know, one of the things I was reading in the Book of Mormon one day, I think we were having a sacrament service, and I read something that just really kind of hit me as very interesting, that I hadn't ever associated the numbers before. You remember how many people there were on this land when Christ came to them after all of the earthquakes and the cities were buried in the sea and so forth? It says there was about 2,500. Now, I believe our church here in America is somewhere close to that, around 2,500. I believe our church in Africa is probably pretty close to that, about 2,500. The Philippines?
A little more
than that. A little over 2,500. That was just an interesting group of numbers that I thought fit in pretty good. You know, there's scriptures that tell us that this gospel is going to be preached in all the world. Now, I don't know to what extent does that mean every nation? You know, every nation has access to our website right now and to our beliefs. We need to be looking for opportunities to continue to spread this gospel whenever we can. And like I mentioned earlier, one of the things that we need to recognize is the necessity of, I believe it is very important that we bring this gospel to all the world. But there are temporal needs too. And as the demands are put upon the church for more and more travel, more and more temporal needs these peoples have, more demands are going to be put upon us. So I hope each one of you recognize that the necessity of supporting the church and the missionary activities of the church and supporting the church in general with your prayers, with your tithings. There was another experience that we had in Tanzania after we left. I talked to Buzz one day after he had talked with Michael and Moses, and he had decided to send Michael back down to Tanzania. That's when he found out this other group had gone after another church that was going to pay him. And one of the buildings that we had rented was, I believe, from a guy that had two wives. Is that correct, Brian? The guy in Mwanza? Yeah. And we had talked to him about that, and unfortunately, they decided to address that and had quite a confrontation during one of the services, and it made him real mad that we would not accept that, and we just could not accept that. him having two wives, and it just was not to be. So he caused a lot of problems down there by threatening to have the next Sunday when the people met, he was going to have them thrown in jail for, I don't know, he told them some lie, I guess. So Michael went down to take care of that. And I believe the email came here and explained that situation. Is that correct? Do you remember? I think so. And anyway, there were a lot of prayers offered, I'm sure, both here and over there. And once again, the prayers were answered. Michael got down there, and the report that we got back from him was that the Spirit of God had been at work again. I don't remember all the details, but it went very smoothly. It ended up, the man that was, I don't know what he was, a chief of police or something like that, ended up being on our side and agreeing with the things that we were teaching and preaching, and he was quite upset with the other guy that was trying to bring charges against our church. And anyway, it came out very well. And there was another service that we were in when a man stood up and spoke, and he told us about a dream that he had. Now, with my hearing, I don't hear all of the words, so all I can remember is he had a dream, and he explained his dream, and it had something to do with Tanzania. And when Moses afterwards told us what the dream was about, it was a fulfillment. He had had this dream several days before, I guess. And it was a fulfillment of what happened in Tanzania was a fulfillment of this dream. And this dream just turned out to be the man that gave it was the brother of Moses, who had come back into the church, I guess, just about a year ago. But anyway, it was a very touching moment there, because we saw again the hand of God at work with the people. There was a prayer service that we're in, a sacrament service at Karen, where was that last prayer service on the side of the hill? Ramba, yeah. We had a prayer service at Ramba where it was not unlike our prayer services here. It was about 3 or 4 hours long. And one of the things that Smith and I were trying to tell the people is their experience about sacrament service was very, they wanted to know how we did our sacrament services, because they have not had a sacrament service anywhere like what ours are. And so we were trying to explain to them how our sacrament services go and the need for reverence in a sacrament service. And we were having a little difficulty getting through to them. And we had a few moments there where prayers were offered that were heard by our Lord and answered, in that our brother Michael stood up under the influence of the Spirit. And spoke to the people there. And spoke to Moses. And he was very humble when he did it. And he was saying the words that were given to him from God, telling the people how they have not humbled themselves sufficiently and have not come to the sacrament services in the right attitude. And that's one of the things that we were trying to get through to the people, in because they, as you all know, they love to sing songs. And if they have too much silence at one time, they will go into song. It is just something that is so natural to them. And we're trying to get through to them that there are times when you need to stop and listen for that still, small voice. And I think that we were finally able to start getting through to them, and Michael and Moses are going to emphasize that a little more. It was such a great privilege for me to be there. I look forward to going again. You know, I made the statement over there that I could live here. You know, I would sure miss my family, and brothers and sisters here, but what joy God gives to those who are in His service. It's a wonderful, wonderful feeling. You've each experienced it. And I want you to remember those feelings that you felt when God gives you that joy. When you need that joy again in your life, think about how to get it. Be in service to your fellow man. There was one service that I had two or three scriptures that I had written down, and again, quite similar to an experience I had up there in one of the New York reunions. I stood up to say something, and something else came out. Something I hadn't thought of. There it was. I started preaching. And I preached for an hour without having to look at any notes, just referring to the scriptures. And all I can think of is, what a joy it is that comes from God to those who are in His service. Perhaps sometime in the next 2 months before we head back to Phoenix, I can put together a video program, and we can go over some of these things, and I can explain a few more things to you. But right now, I'm not going to take any more time from Andy. I'm going to turn it over to him and let him tell you the rest of the story. Thank you.
It's interesting to hear some of the differences between one side of the planet and the other, and a lot of the similarities. And one thing's for certain, the same anxieties in the ministers of the Lord. When you worry, did I say too much? Did I not say enough? Did I say what was right? Did I say what was wrong? Because you answer to a higher power. And those people are listening to every word. Brother Don Case, way in the back. Can I get you to kind of turn some lights down? Will that help? I guess you're the man to ask. You're standing up there like you want something to do. I greet you in the name of Jesus Christ, and it is my privilege to offer you some impressions of the Philippines. And I hope you enjoy receiving it as much as I'll enjoy giving it. And this little electronic gizmo is waiting on your touch, Mr. Cody. All right. This is the first time for me. I've never seen this thing before, so I'm ready. All right. That don't look like much. There it is. If I could title this picture is, "Oh My God, What Have I Done?" I think that's the ones responsible right there. The Brantner boys. The only thing I wished is I wished my granddad was with me. That would have been a treat. And that would probably drove Frank to do something he didn't want to do. I put on some pictures of some flowers to talk about something else. All right, my first impression in the Philippines was the warm greetings, the love and unconditional acceptance that was shown to me, a complete stranger, in the parking lot at the airport. Hugs and kisses and warm embraces from everyone there, and more names than I could remember. But it didn't matter, because we were all members of the Church of Christ. And then some more beautiful flowers. But the second impression was the drive to the hotel. And the poverty, and the pollution, and the traffic, and the roads, and the heat, and the humidity. And then I'm thinking, oh my God, what have I done? I've got to endure this for 3 weeks. Where's the nearest bathroom? That's the next thought in my mind, just in case I need it. And if you've ever saw one of their bathrooms, you would know you'd be desperate. But you'd sure appreciate having it at the time. And I was impressed by the haves and the have-nots. You know, cardboard boxes are used for homes around here. That's pretty much the norm over there, only they're made out of bamboo with mud floors and sewage ditches running along and garbage piles in front. And it's depressing. It really is. And then there's the haves in the gated communities, and you can see the tiled roofs over the top and the TV towers, and you know that that's where the people of means live. And you know that they intend to keep it that way, because on top of the 10-foot concrete walls surrounding their abodes are glass shards embedded in the concrete. No one climbs over this wall. And that's the story of the Philippines, a land of great contrast. If it wasn't for the Spanish, it was for the Japanese that raped, maimed, and pillaged the communities. You know, and then they're struggling with internal strifes with a government that they don't have. And it's a sad thing to see indeed. But you know, you can find wrong and fault everywhere you go. Right in this country, right in this room. But if you look to the beautiful things, it overwhelms all that despair and poverty and pollution. And that's why I was starting out with some pictures of some beautiful flowers, because that's my real impression, is the beauty of the Philippines. How can you look upon this and not smile? This is a picture of Cody's. You know, I selected about 8% out of the pictures that my brother and I took, and he took probably four times more than I did. And I tried to intermix pictures of his and mine in this mosaic. We have those here. But when you're standing in the middle of a mud hut, you know, and the sweat's running down the small of your back, and the mosquitoes seek to enter into your internal parts with malaria, diseases, and whatnot, this looks pretty darn good, pretty comforting. This was a favorite of Cody's. This little man's even got a Power Ranger, I think that's what them are, on the front of his dungarees there, with a facial expression that should be on a painting on a calendar somewhere. This is one of mine. The little girl in the pink, she would poke in and out of the side doors of the church and smile and run and giggle, run around to the other side. And Cody got the thumbs up out of this group, a young scallywags. We tried to teach them a little bit about America, Excuse me?
Bubblegum.
Bubblegum. You had to buy them with bubblegum. Yeah. My treats lasted about a day and a half. Cody was a little bit better at passing his out. And these were two young fellers. The thumb and the finger under the chin means handsome, guapo, or beautiful. You'll see that in their pictures. Look at me. I'm handsome. This old woman, I got to tell you. We went to the home of Sister Evelyn. What was her last name? Formentera. Lost her husband a few years back to a bomb in the airport at Davao. Professional boxer. But at any rate, this old woman was there, and I never did get her name. I never got her to speak. But she was doubled over with ulcer pain in tears, and we administered to her. And before we left, I knew I needed to do more. So I knelt down in front of her and gave her a hug. And she wouldn't let go. She wouldn't let go. And I kept pulling, and she wouldn't. She's strong. She wouldn't let this old fat boy go. I kissed her on the head. She did something to me that the young ones will do to the adults. When you shake their hand, they'll put their back of their hand on, or back of your head, hand on their forehead. It's a sign of respect. And this woman did that to me. And then there was two of us there crying. And my heart was consumed with love for her. A week later, she was at a service. Looked like a spring chicken bouncing around. Evidently, the Lord blessed her. This is another lady from Cody's pictures. Just an example of the beauty that you find in every wrinkle. And the love that you feel and the expression on their faces. Just unbelievable. These are all my impressions. I assume that's what you wanted. And the beauty of the land. It's hot and the roads are bumpy, and I'm told sometimes dusty, though, because of the rain. It wasn't when I was there. And you're tired and you're sore and you're hanging on because your head don't bounce well off the grab bar along the top of the ceiling. And then you see things like this. And like that. From mountains to jungles to rice fields. Got all the pictures. Beautiful scenery. My smallest Filipino with the largest guitar. The man on the left never changed his expression. Picked up a banjo and could have went to Nashville. Never moved a muscle in his face. Couldn't get him to smirk, grin, chuckle, or nothing. The individual on the right is Jonathan. He's adorned his guitar with Dole pineapple stickers. Probably one of the prettiest guitars in the Philippines. This was Cody's smallest Filipino. With a large guitar. And I'm told he could really play too. I wasn't privileged to hear.
7 years old.
I could be 107 and never learn to play one of those things. Back at the Panabo local church, a lot of singing. Always a lot of singing. Beautiful singing. And I lose some of the names on the boys, but the lady in the pink shirt on the left is the daughter of Prudencio, Prulianne. Chances are, if you email Prudencio, she's the one going to run the computer. It's a big help to the work over there. Omega Mays on her left. And I think that's Bobby Mark in the middle, isn't it? Yeah. It's amazing I can remember my own name. This young man turned 18 while we were there. And here it is, 15, 16, 17 of us stuffed in this little minivan on the way to the beach for a Sea Hut Fellowship Day. And it was Cody's 18th birthday. They serenaded him for 45 minutes with a guitar and song in that van. And I just was sitting back, smiling, soaking it up. I could hear everything for a change. It was beautiful. Well, I'll tell you, there's a lot of girls there wanting it to be. If Cody had one burden to bear. It was he had a big bullseye tattooed on him. He was girl bait. I got probably more pictures of him with a girl than any other grouping I could make. And actually, he never found one taller than himself. Everywhere he went, the kids surrounded him. So though Cody wasn't in the ministry, he was a missionary. And he did a good work. He was a pleasant company to have there and a tremendous asset to the work of the church. And a snappy dresser. And wasn't privileged to be there that day, but that's a lady in a ceremonial traditional garb. Brother Frank and Cody can tell you where that was, but that was one of the days we split up. Generally, we split in two teams. One day, we split in three teams, and Andy was all alone. I didn't put in any pictures. Well, I kind of have one, but I began to wonder what was going on because this little guy on a smaller motorcycle picked me up in town, and everybody left. The van left. They deserted me. And here's this white guy sitting on the back of this little motorcycle with this Filipino in front of him going down through town, and everybody's looking and pointing. What's this? And we go to this gated home whose brother-in-law was in charge of this home but didn't know they were using it for church services, didn't approve of it. And we go through the open steel gate, and the gate slams shut behind me, and I think, oh, I'm going to be on the news. But, you know, we had a wonderful service, and I got a ride on another motorcycle by another Filipino later. And he told me, he said, I'm smallest Filipino, but I have biggest bike. Down through the town we went. Again, everybody's pointing and looking. Jeff went right to work when we got there. Couldn't even get to the first church service, and the van pulls over, and he skittles down under the bridge and starts baptizing. I know Jeff wanted to stay longer, but sometimes obligations get in the way. The little girl, if I remember there, that he's commencing to baptize, I believe she's the one that was 10. You found you had to ask their ages. And boy, they sure sounded like they were bigger than they looked. And I think they really were. And that was another day. I wasn't with them that day. I believe this was in the ocean or Davao Bay. Some more baptisms. And Jeff made quite a head of steam up, had a lot of momentum, and well-received, and spent some time with the youth, which is his talent, and even so much that he and Brother Frank were trying to convert Jolly B. Jolly B is probably saying, hey, this is some guy here, you know. Jolly B is a Burger King food chain over there. And again, I wasn't there. I got the chicken and the fish and the rice. And then the next day it was the rice and the chicken and the fish. Jollibee is something special. And if you like this treat, barbecued bananas. Believe it or not, they're quite good. The barbecue, they call it that. It's more of a caramel glaze. And they're really so hot you can't eat them. You got to let them cool off. But they'll sit down and eat them like popsicles. And it's quite good. This was the day that I had the motorcycle rides. The gentleman in the white shirt on the right is a church member named Bernie Marzon and his wife Lucy. And that's at his dinner table. The loaf of bread was in my honor. And no one else ate any. And I thought, boy, how am I going to eat this whole loaf of bread? I only ate one piece. But as you can see, that's a snapshot of the smiles and the laughs and the giggles and the stories. It's just happy to be there. Just fun. No pressure, no interrogations. And everybody was on a level playing field. And you really felt like you were welcome. Because you were. Sister Lucy there. As well as we sing, I have yet to hear anyone in the world ever sing as beautiful as I heard her that day. And perhaps it was the setting, you know, in the mood and everything. Maybe I had fresh batteries in my hearing aids. Maybe that helped. But absolutely beautiful. And Bernie, stupendous interpreter. So I've never preached with an interpreter before, and it was a new experience for me to talk in little quips and phrases. And I made a tragic error with Bernie, and I asked him to read about, 9 or 10 verses out of Isaiah and interpret them. And Brother Frank kind of looked up to me from the pews out of the chairs out there and said, "He's really struggling." I guess that's quite hard to read in English and interpret in another language. Yeah. My brother from Yucatan agrees. So I was probably out of line, but this is first time for me. So. But Bernie did rather well. That was one of the baptisms, probably the most beautiful locale that I've ever had the privilege of doing any baptizing in. You see how clear the water is. And that young man in the maroon-colored shirt there was 12. He stumbled a little bit coming up out of the water, so he was the last one, so I just picked him up and carried him out, thinking I was doing him a favor. But when I sat him down, he looked like a little monkey jumping around on the rocks, thinking, "Well, you should have helped this old boy out of there." Yeah, it was hot that day. I wouldn't have minded just jumping in, but I didn't know if that would be very appropriate. And that's Brother Jonathan up on the rock with the green hat, our interpreter. And another baptism. Notice here the young men. It's been my experience in the church that usually the ladies are more receptive, more willing to submit and be humble. Seldom will you find young men. You know, I spent my whole life trying to be a man, and I'm still waiting on that. But these young men are coming forth, and I find that to be exciting. And I often wonder, am I looking at a future missionary and a future member of the priesthood? I hope so. And another group of baptisms, the little guy on the right, of course, was just along for the ride. He wasn't baptized. That's his mother there. And as this place worked out, you moved the water buffalo over and slid into the stream. And you walk through town to get there. And everybody in town looked at, what in the world is this happening now? And naturally, they all gather on the bridge to watch. So there may be some more work there yet. Because as we preached at the lady in the with holding the baby, she owns a store. And we had a service right in the storefront. And everybody that wasn't in the service was close enough to hear what was being said. So there may be some good come forth there yet, to a large degree. In the Philippines, the bathrooms is the first concern. Where are they and what are they? And what if I need one? And the other concern is the travel. As I said, the roads are terrible. The walking is tough sometimes. But here's one where we're walking to New Opon from Cabalao. And it's mostly downhill at this point anyway. And it was rather enjoyable. Walk through little suburbanite villages in the jungle. The people living there may harvest bananas. They may have a route they take and gather rubber from rubber trees. I've got a picture of that, too. It's not in here, but there's just no telling what they might do. And sometimes the walk is uphill. Now, that's on the way back from another baptism, 3 that day. And it was uphill, and it was through the bush. You just don't think about what creepy crawly things you've seen on the Tarzan movies or in jungles. You just walk. And sometimes you walk on water. That's a bamboo bridge. And if I understood right, motorcycle loads of bananas cross that bridge. And it was just about all I wanted to do to walk on it. It's pretty narrow. But we crossed there to the deep side of the river, and the previous picture with the boys in it was the baptisms. And sometimes you go by jeepney. The jeepney don't go over the water, it goes through it. And sometimes clean over the floorboards. You pick your knapsack and your feet up. That individual there, I don't remember his name, but he was sure a good jeepney driver. There were some hills he couldn't have made if he hadn't slid through the corner and maintained momentum. Very good. That's Raffy on the right in the gray shirt. He's our principal driver over there. And that's the principal van. And it's well worn and weary. But it got the job done, and Raffy was always there. The only episodes was one dead dog and one flat tire. And I don't know what the dog was thinking, but he stood right out in the road and wouldn't move. And you don't slow down for him, so he hit him. And there's Raffy. He was our secondary driver one day when we split up in his green van. It's green. If you don't believe me, go to the Philippines and ask Prudencio what color Raffy's van is. You'll find it's green. That's the green van. Is that right, Cody? Did I hear something? And then sometimes you just walk. The jeepney's down at the bottom of the hill. Ford of the river couldn't make the hill. And you walk. And we're about halfway up the hill at that point and about a half mile to go. Funny thing was on that walk, that was the walk to Pig de Lahan. We crossed through a little burgie, as they call it, grouping of homes and a few little storefronts. And I hear this noise. Oh, that sounds familiar. And it's coming from this fairly large hut. I couldn't see inside. I got a little closer. Well, there's a pool table and pinball machines in there. Out in the middle of the jungle. Yeah, that's quite a contrast. It's a land of contrast. The Filipinos solve their transportation needs. The catchphrase in the Philippines is there's always room for one more Filipino. And you'll see them load up on a small motorcycle of 80 or 90 cc and there'll be 5, 6, 7 people. Sometimes one on the front fender, on the handlebars, dad's on the tank, and mom and the kids and everybody stacked in behind. There may be a pig tied up in the mix somewhere. And then they go ahead and put sidecars on so they can haul bushels and bushels of rice and bananas and pigs and people. And if that ain't enough, they'll take planks and put across their ways in the seat. They call them Skylabs. Well, now dad and about 3 kids can sit on the motorcycle, and mom and grandma and the 2 teenagers can sit on the other side, and this thing's 6 feet wide coming down the road. Looks like Skylab. And they're dangling their feet out here over in the middle of nothing. Down the road to go. Didn't get a picture of one of them because they come and go so quick. That's the church building at Mapaso. It's one of the larger ones. One of the nicer ones. They have a facility, a unisex facility out back. A few cement blocks and a piece of sheet metal. And the bottom half of a porcelain commode. And when you get done, you dip the coffee can out of the rain barrel. And where it goes from there, I have no idea. But they have a cement floor, and it's pretty nice. The cement pad out front is used for drying rice. It's also used for basketball when there is no rice. And that day it was raining, and it was kind of a slicky, mossy-like fungus mold or something growing on it. And these little kids would come running and jump on their belly like one of them slipping slides, and away they'd go. They was having a good time. And that's the church building at Pig de Lahan. I would say it's more the average. Dirt floor, split rail benches. Probably, I don't know, 16 by 30 feet, something like that. Full of people. This was our competition at, what was the name of that place? Cody, you should remember. Dumlin Macol. That little rooster, Cody got this picture. I wished I had, but he wouldn't quit. He was crowing for 30 minutes. And then Brother Frank rose to speak, and he quieted right down. I guess he met his match. Sister Lolita, you've all met, I hope, when she was here. On the right is Sister Magdalena. She's our cook. Darn good one, too. Every day, we would spend hours and miles toiling on the highways and having services. She was right with us. And she'd have a lunch prepared for us in little foam boxes. And the next day, she'd have another lunch. She had to go home and cook at night or in the morning for us. So her day was exceedingly long. And she toiled away unselfishly and without complaint. the whole time. I have great respect for her. Not only was her cooking good, but her personality is exceptional. We called her Magdalena Eat More. Because when you sat down, eat more, eat more. And you had to be pretty sly because she was dumping it on your plate at the time. And by the way, she's looking for a handsome husband. I told her I would ask. Now, everywhere you go, there's smiles. Everybody wants in the picture. Brother Jonathan there, I call him the Vanna White of the Philippines. Would anybody like to buy a vowel? Yeah, I got more pictures of him, given the Vanna White expression. Those were pictures Cody took. You'd have to ask him where they were at, but it's typical. Typical of all the smiles and the love you find. And this is the church Gladys Nash built. You've seen pictures of that before. Long way up on a mountain. And that's just a handful of the people that were there. But Frank told me a story about the children there. And I don't know, he's probably told you already, but I want to tell it again. Briefly, before the church was there, those children were infested with tumors and lesions. Was it from the chemicals sprayed on the bananas, going down the streams in the bath water? You know, who knows? They're healed. Since the church has been there, they're healed. Don't think they don't notice. At the Sea Hut Village, I spied something in the tree. You know, you don't see much wildlife over there. The birds are gone. The critters you would expect in the jungle, you don't see. I'm told that's because they've ate them all. And I partly believe it. But I seen this guy, and I thought, I got to get a picture of this Filipino monkey. Well, we didn't know what else to do with him, so he's now a priest in the Church of Christ. Arterio Superior. And that picture depicts his personality. He's quiet, reserved, withdrawn. But as my dad and others have said, he's the little Leslie of the Philippines. If you need something done, he's already doing it. You can plan on him. Wonderful person. Let me get this name right. Buenaventura Retinal, with his wife Remy. Call him Brother Ben. He's your new teacher in the Philippines. Very nice, capable individual as well. I couldn't get his wife to say anything, but she was a very pleasant person to be around. Brother Tobias Operio, another new elder in the Philippines, and his wife Melba. Tobias has been the leader, pastor of the Compostela local, the most populated local in the Philippines at this time. With great confidence in him as well. And Brother Jonathan again, oldest son of Brother Prudencio, now an elder in the Church of Christ. You know, it's funny. There's folks that you like, and there's folks you love. And there's folks you don't really have any reason for it. You just drawn to them. You just click, you know. Well, Jonathan is one of those. I just felt like immediately I was close to this man. And that feeling hasn't changed or went away. Elder Demetrio here interpreting for Frank at Mapaso. Elder Demetrio is, he's a little bit of a card. He likes to find things to laugh about. One day, I can't remember the name, but the roof collapsed on Brother Cody and Brother Frank, dumping an innumerable gallonage of fresh rainwater upon them. I wasn't there to see it. I wished I had been. But Brother Demetrio told us about the rebaptism we had today. And that was just prior to them coming over here. You'll notice there that Brother Demetrio seeks a higher office than Brother Frank. He finds a step to stand on. He'll start off interpreting off on your left, and you're behind the pulpit. And before you know it, he's behind the pulpit. He's a wonderful person. Now, Brother Roger Manali on the left is one of the continuing elders over there. Brother Demetrio on the right again. And the one in the middle, Brother Jay Moser, warned you about years ago. The large white Filipino. Brother Frank told me to stay close to my dad and take his cue. Well, he came down with double pneumonia while he was over there, so it was difficult to stay close to him. I had to slow way down. But he went and climbed every mountain. And you've all met those. Brother Prudencio and Lolita. Brother Prudencio, of course, the first elder in the Philippines, where the church really began with his inquiry and his desire. Now, my dad warned me. I said, I got to get a picture of a nurse to show my sister-in-law, who's an RM. And he warned me, and I didn't heed his warning. I asked the lady on the right of center with the watch, I said, who in here speaks English? This is a hospital in Tagum City. And she says, well, we all do. And I said, well, I'd like to get a picture of a nurse to take home. And these nurses came from everywhere on a dead run. Now, you heard of over-the-counter medicine? The lady on the left is the over-the-counter nurse. She was going to hurdle that desk to get in this picture. So that's precious to me. Now, look on the from the right, count three heads, and who do you see? Brother Demetrio. Not bad for an aged old man hurdling that counter to get in this picture. This little man, Dumlin Mako, 16 years old, name's Raldo J. Cardeno, needs our prayers. Cerebral palsy, mentally retarded, sitting on his father's lap, his brother beside him, and of course Master Cody behind there. Naturally, my heart is affixed upon this man because of the situation. But you administer to one, you look up, and here's 10 more, or 12. I couldn't get to this one fast enough. We pray for a miracle. This little girl, I call her the coconut girl. A year or two back, Frank, my dad can tell you, coconut fell 40-some feet from a tree and beamed her on the head. You know, there's a lot of deaths attributed to that in the Philippines. Split her skull from front to rear. If you zoom in on that picture, you can see the scar coming down almost to her eyebrow line. Literally split her head open. And there she was. Another miracle in the Philippines. She was quiet, but I don't think she spoke English. Nothing wrong with a girl being quiet. But there she was in church. This is just a picture to show you that the Filipinos get tired too. I knew how hard it was for me. And they have some kind of skeletal rigging in their joints or something in this bumpy old jeepney going down this Banana Grove Lane, potholes big enough to swallow most mid-sized automobiles. They lock themselves in and they sleep. I don't know, it must be from years of training, hanging on for their dear life. Last but not least, most places it's unisex bathrooms, you know, this tree or that tree. Take your choice. They've got something on us there. Not only do they have a men's and a women's, but a female emergency restroom. And if you looked inside, you might wonder, how big an emergency is this? Because usually they're not too spiffy. Imagine your worst nightmare at a truck stop in the middle of the night on some old decrepit highway somewhere, and that's probably a good one. That's probably a good one. But like I said, the trip to the Philippines, 3 weeks. I don't think I've ever learned as much ever in my life that I did in those 3 weeks. It was a struggle to try to remember the names and the places and the times. And to be firm on your schedule, yet flexible because it always changes. Many days it rains and you go left instead of right. You roll with it. Oft times you prepare sermons and you have several in mind, but when you get there, the Lord says something different. And you go with it. And you let the Spirit lead. And I would say, to be not too self-critical, but the best jobs I did out of maybe, you know, two or three was when I let the Lord lead and left the notes in the bag. But yes, their government is corrupt and unstable. Country could be in a revolution someday. There is great unrest in the land. We went through military mandatory stops, police stops. Never gave us any trouble, just wanted to know what was what. But there is a vast class distinction in the land, and there are those determined to keep it that way because they're on the top of the pile. And there are those that are on the bottom of the pile. And those are the ones that are eager to hear the truth. The roads are terrible. The pollution is terrible, at least along the roads. And the poverty, always the poverty. The people are smaller. The cars are smaller and the motorcycles are smaller. But their hearts are huge. Never have I seen people so eager and willing to hear. And to believe. These are my impressions of the Philippines. And I know God has inspired this work. And I give them to you. God is preparing them for the glory to come, I am convinced. I had a whole sermon prepared for them that I never really gave. And it says in the Bible to preach the gathering to the isles of the sea. That sermon remains to be said. But they know that God is working with them. They send their love to each and every one of you in hope that you'll support them in your prayers. And I know you will. God bless each and every one of you. If you have any questions, Brother Frank will be glad to answer them. That's how you get out of it at the end of the day. And any questions on Africa? We've still got 5, 6, 7 minutes here, unless you're not too hungry. So I learned just a little bit of their language, but I won't do it that injustice by trying to repeat it here.